You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Journeyman, and today I am joined by Twitter legend Dragonfly Jones and movie star Juju Gotti. We talk Beast Brackets, the Johnny Manziel documentary, and Michael Orr getting blindsided, plus so much more. Let's get it.
Who are these guys?
It's my theme music. Every good hero should have some.
This is an institution of learning, ladies and gentlemen. If you can't control it, how can you teach? Discipline is not the enemy of enthusiasm.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Journeyman, brought to you by the good folks at the DraftKings Network and Meadowlark Media. As always, I'm your host, Andrew Hawkins, 7 years in the NFL, 2 Grey Cup championships in 2 years in the CFL, and 1 pulled hamstring this week. Your boy is washed. We'll get into that. I'm joined today by my man, Dragonfly Jones. You know him on Twitter of the Jenkins and Jones podcast. Tyler, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you having me on, man. You know, big fan of what y'all got going on there at Meadowlark, of course, you know, y'all fam. So, you know, happy to be on here. Again, appreciate you having me on, bro.
Absolutely, man. You know, I sat in on one of your conversations with Dan Le Batard, and you were talking about the Beast Bracket.
Hell yeah.
And I could not help. I don't know if there was a more, like, unassuming, addictive conversation. Because I'm not like an animal person by any stretch of the imagination. But as y'all were talking about it, and you know, I'm not going to tease. Actually, you tell the Journeyman viewers what the Beast Bracket is.
All right. So basically, you know, it's something that came about because there's absolutely nothing to talk about in the summer.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I'm
factuals.
Saying? So, yeah. So, you know, we had this hypothetical animal fight tournament kind of in the format of March Madness. But, you know, the unique thing about what we had here was we had a catch weight here, right? Like, so in combat sports, you know, boxing, MMA, there's always weight classes. So we were like, you know, the thing that's missing from these animal discussions is, you know, weight classes, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, because of course a lion, you know, will maul a wolf one-on-one, right?
Of course.
But if you get 4 250-pound lions and 10 100-pound wolves at the catch rate of 1,000 pounds like we had for this, then we got ourselves a conversation, right? Like, that's a legit fight right
yep.
there. So, yeah. So, you know, we're doing the catch weight stipulation. So we had all combinations of animals weighing up, you know, against 1,000 pounds facing off against each other, which led to some unique combinations. And, you know, sometimes you'd have one big boy, like one, you know, 1,000-pound polar bear, or, you know, a bunch of little guys, like 205-pound roosters, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we opened it up to the Twitter polls, you know, the Twitter people, picked who they wanted to advance, you know, in certain matchups. We had an online pick 'em contest that had like 2,700 people who
uh-huh.
had it. And so, you know, the people spoke, the eight 125-pound Jaguars were eventually crowned the champs. And, you know, I think that's a good choice right there. I think that is a solid, you know, contender right there for best fucking, you know, combination of animal brawlers.
How many Jaguars was it?
Eight 125 Jags.
You know what?
Yeah, the championship match was against 2 500-pound tigers. So,
okay. 2 500-pound tigers. Yeah, I like that. I think someone who got snubbed in it, I think I heard you say it was 25 Wolverines.
Yes. That they were good enough to win it all, bro.
I think they should have won it
Wolverines.
All, bro. I think they got hosed.
We might need to do a recount.
I think you should redo the bracket and just have like real life animal experts on there to really make the determination. This might be a whole docu-series. Meadowlark, I'm giving y'all a layup here. This is a whole docu-series that you're letting just slip through your fingers. We should be knee-deep in development on this. But the Wolverines, I always say, like in football, because I say it on this show all the time, size isn't scary. Speed is scary.
Right.
And if you have the combination of size and speed, you're the scariest, to your point about lions and tigers and all of that. But 25 Wolverines, as vicious as they are, is next level scary shit.
Next level, though. Yes, because, you know, something that we always had in our arguments is like, you got to look at strength of schedule here. And strength of schedule is basically, you know, what animals does this animal prey on? Does this animal fight on in the wild, right?
Uh-huh.
And a 40-pound Wolverine can take down like a fucking 1,000-pound bison, right? There's been stories of a Wolverine who snuck into a polar bear's enclosure in a zoo and killed the polar bear, right? Like, so the strength of schedule with those animal, dudes, man, is ridiculous, right? These guys are going to, you know, Tuscaloosa and getting road winds and shit. You know what I'm saying?
I think the Wolverine might be the animal I identify with most. That's my kind of style, bro. Just unassuming, walk in, and I came for a problem. That's what I'm here for. What animal do you think you identify most with of all the animals in the bracket?
You know, I'd say, you know, going back to the roosters, I might be a rooster, bro.
Like, you might be a rooster?
Like, I feel like roosters are fearless, you know what I'm saying? A little too fearless at times, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, you know, they bite off more than they can chew, and it doesn't, you know, wind up great for them. But I might be a rooster, bro.
We did athlete comparisons,
you know, to these animals as well, on like the scout reports, and Manny Pacquiao was a rooster there. So,
okay.
You know.
All right, so what, our first topic, we're going to get into a little bit of sports documentaries. We're going to try to go through this quick in this first segment, but have you had the opportunity to watch the Johnny Manziel documentary on Netflix?
I did.
What's your first takeaway from what you saw?
I think we need to preface it because, you know, I think all of us come into this with baseline and even extended knowledge about Johnny Manziel. So the thing about Johnny Manziel with me personally is he is the wrongest I've possibly ever been about an NFL prospect, bro.
Wow. You're not side of camp, huh?
Yeah, because...
Okay, I'm going to change your mind about that by the end of this conversation, but go ahead.
Because, you know, coming in, you know, there were doubts about Johnny Manziel, which is why I don't know about if you can necessarily call him a bust, because, you know, people were saying he is not going to succeed at the next level because of these things, right?
Right.
And the three major gripes with him were, you know, he was undersized, mm-hmm. right? The other one was his mechanics. And then mm-hmm. there was like his off the field antics.
Yeah,
and
that's the big
thing. I will give you the rundown of why I so wrongly disagreed with all those gripes, right? Right. So the first gripe was height. You know, he was undersized. And you got to keep in mind, this was 2014. Right. So like two of the top five QBs in the league were undersized at that time. Right. So I was like, why are we still doing this undersized thing to knock against quarterbacks when we've got, you know, Drew Brees and Russell Wilson out here?
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? Second gripe, you know, as I mentioned, was his mechanics. And, you know, as far as mechanics went, and, you know, I'm still kind of on this boat. I just never was of the belief that non-conventional quarterbacks need to have conventional mechanics.
Yeah.
You know, you feel me? And
again,
this was 2014, bro. Like 2014 felt like the future, right? Like Cam Newton, you know, had perhaps the greatest rookie year of a QB a few seasons before that, like 4,000 yards, 800 yards rushing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had that 2012 class with, you know, RG3, Russ, Cap. And it just felt like, you know, like I said, holding a non-conventional quarterback's pocket mechanics against him.
Against him.
Just was starting to feel
especially,
a bit, you know,
especially
antiquated.
When his value proposition at the time was the fact that he was non-conventional. Like
right.
That was the thing he brought to the table. So to hold him to that standard when he doesn't check any of the other boxes is ridiculous. You're holding him to rules
right.
of a game he doesn't play. So I'm
exactly.
with you 100%. I want to hear this third one of how did you get past all the off-field stuff of everything you had heard?
I thought it was just a college kid doing college kid shit. I was
okay.
like, okay, he goes to frat houses and he parties and gets drunk. Like, what 21-year-old doesn't do that?
Yeah, here's
you
here's,
know what I mean?
Here's where you messed up, Dragonfly Jones. Hey, this is where you messed up. It's because if it starts to bubble up, and we're going to call a spade, for a white quarterback in Texas, if it starts to bubble up a little bit past outside of that bubble, you know it's probably a real problem. Right. Like, because if it was just innocent college kid stuff, they probably would have kept it under wraps a little bit better than what they could. But they honestly couldn't contain it to where everyone in the country knew what time it was.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's
hindsight.
Like I didn't know it at the time. I don't want to make it seem like I was in front of the curve. I was not. I was team Johnny Manziel through and through.
Yeah. He, like I said, I just thought it was a bunch of old people, you know, shaking their fists at the cloud, like the undersized thing, the mechanics, the, you know, the partying antics. But yeah, I was dead wrong. Listen, the naysayers, they nailed the fuck out of those three names. They got all three. They went 3 for 3 on the nays with Johnny Manziel. Steph Great Curry. Job, naysayers. Hats off to y'all on that one.
Johnny Football naysayers went Steph Curry on it. So I like the documentary. And we'll probably actually bleed this into the next segment because this is, we got a lot for this. And I talked about Johnny on this show because I was front row for the Johnny Manziel experience. And as I watched the documentary, me and my wife watched it, and it was we were extremely interested in it because, again, we had saw it firsthand because I was in Cleveland when he got drafted and I played with him his entirety in Cleveland. And not only that, I was even more connected. But I remember when Johnny came in and there was so much fanfare around Johnny nationwide and in Cleveland, and we would be in the locker room. And for the entire 2 years, man, it was like Johnny was in his own world. So to hear on the documentary that he was dealing with all this pressure and depression and he just didn't want to be there, and he had all these like grand plans of like almost ending it in his time there.
Yeah.
It so perfectly matches up because we will be trying to, a couple of us that were like more veterans on the team, we would be trying to engage him. And he literally wouldn't say a word to anybody in the locker room. Not like purposely, but you could just tell he was dealing with stuff. And when people talk about Johnny Manziel, you know, it's like Josh Gordon has substance abuse problems, right? And him and Johnny were there at the same time. But when you look at Josh, and I've had family that, you know, I come from the areas where substance abuse happens. And you know, like, okay, this is something he doesn't have under control. Johnny's felt like he was in search of something. Like, you didn't look at Johnny and the way he was acting and say like, oh man, this guy is trying to fake it or like present as if he's not doing these things. He was very clearly in a state of depression. Like, his mentals weren't there. It was way too big for him. It felt like he was running from something. And you had players on the team who were like, they were so addicted to the fame of Johnny Football. Like, we all thought, okay, this, we'll see what, if he can come in and really do what he says and people think he can. But there were players who were like trying to clamor to be around him to just get a little bit of that limelight that was cast on Johnny. And then there was other guys like Joe Hayden who was really trying to mentor him. He was trying to bring him in to be like, yo, man, you could do something with this. And I think, again, watching the documentary versus what it looked like in real life was just a very, very interesting kind of back and forth.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that you gave us that kind of behind the scenes insight into where there was kind of, you know, a rallying around Johnny Manziel. Because that was, you know, a question I have for you, Louise, like, you know, what was it like at ground zero with the guy? Because, you know, we just had another, you know, Heisman winning quarterback who did not have a tenure there where it seemed like his teammates were rallying around him with Baker Mayfield. Right. So, that was for sure a question that I had there. So, and you know, you said, you mentioned you were a Manziel guy. I know you kind of had to be in good faith as him being your quarterback, but, you know, unbiased opinion, did you think that he was going to, you know, fail or fly in the NFL?
That's a good question. I think it was at a point that it was hard to say, and not because of an ability thing. It was, could he get over this mental block of whatever was happening? You know, but let's take a break and we're going to come back and I'll give you the full detail of what was going on behind the scenes and why I thought Johnny could be successful, but why I probably knew that he wasn't going to. Drop the bass. Welcome back to Journeyman. We're joined by Dragonfly Jones, and we're talking Johnny Manziel documentary on Netflix. Before we took the break, Tyler, you asked me about like what I thought Johnny Manziel was going to be when he came, like, right, as a pro. Now, we would be in meetings every week and he would be asleep. This is a first round draft pick. He would be asleep in the front row. Like, you could fall asleep in the meetings and you're trying to hide it. So in the documentary, he talks about how he was trying to do everything in his power to get out of the situation that he was in because it was too big for him. And that's crazy because I would look down and we would see him sleep in the corner of the room in front of the offensive coordinator, in front of the head coach. They would act like they didn't see him, but it was so very clear that he was trying to show he did not give a damn. Now, in the documentary, his agent, Eric Burkhart, talks about how they can contract this whole, like, from the pre-draft to going radio silent then to after the draft. And he was doing everything in his power to give this kid a chance to kind of turn the leaf. And so I actually got really cool with Eric in that time. He was his agent. And what I was kind of Eric's eyes and ears on the ground with Johnny Manziel. And so I would like let him know, yo, this is what's going on. This is what Johnny has going. And I was like kind of looking out for Johnny in Cleveland. And Eric was very appreciative of that. Now, I didn't know the lengths that EB was going through to try to keep him in the game. But because he was so appreciative, he actually introduced me to Maverick Carter. And that's how I met Mav and eventually interned and then worked there and still work with him today for like the last 7 years. And that's how I actually got that connection because I helped him out with Johnny. But what was crazy, Tyler, was that it was weird to be in a documentary and know that you're in the middle of a future doc. Like this documentary, I think that's why I didn't like wasn't so excited about it, because in the middle of it, I remember there was a, what was the name of that documentary about the USC quarterback? Do you remember?
The 30 for 30?
The 30 for 30. Marinovich?
About Rise of Troy or something like that?
Something where it was like this dad like was basically like groomed this kid to be the best quarterback and he became it in USC.
Oh, you're talking about the Todd Marinovich one.
The Todd Marinovich one.
Yeah.
That was like big at the time. It was like not too old, maybe a couple years. And when Johnny was there, we would all reference that doc. And we were like, wow. Be like, damn, bro, it's crazy. Like, we all knew that we were watching this documentary happen in real time. Like the Johnny, and we all knew it was going to be called Johnny Football. Like that's the name of the documentary. Here we are a decade later. Mm-hmm. And it actually comes through. So it was weird to know you're in the middle of a documentary while it's happening. The thing I think the documentary missed on. Well, before I get to there, you talked about what you thought Johnny was as a player. What did you think, like, as from a fan perspective, like, what did you think of all the off the field stuff? Because it wasn't crazy to me, but I would imagine it was new information to you as you're watching a documentary.
Yeah, you know, I think a huge takeaway here that I haven't heard a lot of people, I don't think I've heard anyone kind of mention, is we don't get this documentary without the recent NIL legalization, right? Mm. Because these dudes admitted to everything
stuff we didn't know.
Right. And it was a bit shocking, but I'm guessing obviously the NCAA can't retroactively punish you for something that's no longer illegal. So I don't think that there's any way this doc even gets made if Manziel's Heisman, you know, was in danger of being repossessed, because, bro, these dudes, Manziel and his friend Nate, admitted to lying to the NCAA during the NCAA investigation about improper funds received and shit, bro. Like, that was kind of a takeaway here. Like, without the NIL shit, we never get this documentary. At least that part, at least.
Yeah, he was getting money, too. That's it.
Cashed out, dog.
Cashed out. You know what? And this is taking a very serious tone that I don't like. So we gotta call it for what it is, too. They didn't mention this. They talked about the hype. I don't think they did a good enough job building up the hype that was around Johnny Manziel. And why? He was white Vic, bro. That's why they loved him. It wasn't because he was a good quarterback and he had wins. It was because we had never seen a white mobile quarterback doing the shit that we see mobile quarterbacks do. And everyone start, oh, we was gassed, bro. It wasn't just white people, black people. It was like, yo, this is crazy. He's out here really saucing people up.
Right. Drake made a draft track for him and Andrew Wiggins, right?
Drake ain't making no, I'm trying to think of another good Texas. Like, Ryan Mallett wasn't getting no Drake references, bro.
Right? Blake Bortles, the number one QB taken in that draft, was not getting Drake
He wasn't getting Drake, man. That wasn't the cool of it. It was like, yo, this dude is running around spin moving. I've never seen a white guy spin move and flick the wrist the way that Johnny Manziel was.
Absolutely. You know, building to what you're saying and kind of tying it back to the NIL thing, I remember there was a conversation on Twitter about what past athlete would have made the most NIL money. And my vote was Johnny Manziel for the same reason you said.
Yeah.
A white boy with swag, right? Like, that you're printing money once you get that. You know what I mean? And you got to be good at what you do, of course. And he was incredible in college. And like I said, he had that white boy, you know, he was a white boy with the swag. And that is marketing gold right there.
It was. And that was, honestly, Baker Mayfield, to your reference, he tried to follow the same path.
The sauce wasn't the same.
The sauce wasn't the same.
That season, it wasn't the same.
We saw through it. But when he was dug in the videos going viral, it was like, oh, okay. And he ended up being, I mean, people have called him Sober Johnny. I'm not saying Sober it was me. Johnny. I've not said that. But that has been a reference that I've saw on Twitter.
Shirley Temple Manziel.
They call him Shirley Temple Manziel. But Johnny was good, though, too. He wasn't like, I remember like having a conversation. I was playing with the Bengals. This is before he got drafted. Zach Robinson, who is now the Rams pass game coordinator, Andy Dalton, and Greg McElroy, who's like the lead college football analyst. They all were like, oh, no, Johnny Manziel is going to take the league over. He does things that you cannot teach a quarterback. His feel for the game, his vision, his instinct, all of that to watch the documentary and realize he was just out there winging it. So that tells you he was special.
You're right. Like, you are a first-round NFL quarterback, and you never watch film. Like, bro,
he's not lying, my boy.
Yeah, that's wild. You said he was in there catching up on Z's. That's crazy.
The coach called me.
A question I have for you, and a reason why I thought that, you know, Manziel was going to work was, you know, I was a Washington fan in a former life, so I was familiar with the miracle worker that Kyle Shanahan could be, kind of even before, you know, everybody got hit to that. Uh-huh. So, you know, Kyle Shanahan was there. I thought that, you know, I just saw what he did with RG3. I saw how he had the world food with Kirk Cousins. And I was like, yo, you know, he's going to work some magic with Manziel. But then he left, like, after Manziel's first year, right? Like, how were the vibes in the locker room when Shanahan left? You know, of course, and seeing that, like, bro, if anyone could maybe save Johnny, it's this guy, and he's on his way out.
I tell you right now, Shanahan owes me at least $10 million. At least $10 million. Shanahan and Mike McDaniel, between the two of them, who is now the head coach of the Dolphins, they owe me $10 million. Had they not left, I would have signed another deal for at least $15 to $20 million, and I probably would have seen $10 million of it, because that's how the league works.
Right.
But they forced their way out of Cleveland after that season because they were forced to play Johnny Manziel. They called me. We were 7-4. They called me like, hey, we're thinking about starting Johnny. And I started laughing because I thought they were joking when the head coach called me. I thought he was playing. He was dead serious. And I was like, yo, you're asking me my thoughts on playing somebody who I know is asleep all day. I know he's not watching film. He threw 3 picks in a walkthrough before the game. And, like, there's nobody playing defense. It was wild, bro. It was like, and now they're watching the doc. I'm like, oh, he probably did that on purpose. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was a crazy experience that definitely deserved the documentary treatment.
Yeah, that was wild. You know, when he said, like, bro, he said it stopped being fun to him at rookie camp. I was like,
I seen Johnny smile. I seen Johnny have a fun time one time, and it was because he was high. That's a fact. Like, there was one time he was super personable, walking around, dapping everybody up, smiling, and it was because he was like, that night before, it was like probably one of the nights he was talking about in the doc, he had went out and kicked it, and it was so visible, everybody was talking about, like, oh, Johnny's on one. So somebody else that got a documentary treatment coming up that was a little bit of a surprise is the other Kelsey, Jason Kelsey. And I was a little shocked by this. I ain't going to lie. I'm a big Kelsey fan. Let's give a round of applause for the Kelseys. They're on a Lynn Sanity type run right now. I mean, 3 Super Bowls between them. Hella Pro Bowls. They hosting SNL. They got one of the hottest podcasts in sports media. But I was a little shocked by a Jason Kelsey doc that's coming on Prime. Not only because... he's an offensive lineman, which nobody cares about O-line in the history of sports. He's a center. So I don't know if you know, like, being a center is like the worst offensive lineman. They get the lowest paid. It's like being I don't even know what the comp is in basketball. Maybe like a defensive specialist for a championship team.
Right.
Like, it's like just a protector. Like, if you have to replace one of your 22 starters, it's the center. Like, I'm telling you, it's like, you know, but he's been really, really good, right? But the reality is, and I think he would also understand this, what we love about Jason Kelsey is the fact that he's Travis Kelsey's brother. That might be a little over the top, but that's, otherwise, there's no other reason why O-line get that kind of love. I don't know what your thoughts are on Jason Kelsey. Maybe I'm wrong.
You know, I'm actually not mad at it, because I think if you look at the two Kelsey brothers, because, you know, this was a documentary done over the course of last season, I think Jason has the most interesting story last year. Because,
absolutely.
You know. Yeah, because, you know, this guy, he's the best center in the league, on the best O-line in the league, blocking for the breakout quarterback of last season. You know, a quarterback who, you know, has had his ups and downs. We know the whole Bama-Oklahoma story with Hurts, right? Uh-huh. Last season was his third season in the NFL, and it started to really click for him. And here you have, you know, Kelsey being his center, his sworn protector for this kid who finally found his way. Like, you know, and then they make it to the Super Bowl, and Kelsey is going up against his brother's team, and he's actually going to be going one-on-one with the guy who's perhaps the best, you know, defensive tackle in the league, with Chris Jones, right? You know, they put up a valiant effort but fall short. That's that Hollywood shit, man. Like, I think that's way more interesting than just seeing Travis Kelsey out there grittying and winning the Super Bowl.
I agree. And I'm serious. This is journeyman. We love to watch the underappreciated get their shine. So I absolutely love the fact that he's getting a documentary. It's just weird. I'm just be honest. Like, again, even the example you gave. We're doing a Jason Kelsey documentary, not a Jalen Hurts documentary. That's why you don't find that suspicious, brother. You don't find that suspicious. That's what I'm saying. It's just I love to see it. I'm curious as why we're seeing this. Is all I'm saying, Tyler.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whoever you know had the vision a year ago, like I don't know what they saw, but I think it worked out great for him. Like I said, I think it's going to be an interesting one.
I mean,
and to your credit, what you said, like the most interesting thing is that he's Travis's brother. I mean, there's a great dynamic those two have there, right? Like you know, Jason's the more reserved, country kind of, you know, Midwestern potato and gravy type dude. And,
exactly.
You know, Travis Kelce is the flashy one, right? So,
yeah,
you know, I do think that, I think his personality is going to, you know, shine a bit here. Because I think for a documentary, you don't want the guy who's on 10. You don't want to watch 2 hours of the guy on 10 the whole time, right?
Too much.
You need some stability. You need to hit cruise control every now and then. You feel me? So
you do got to hit cruise control. Here's my real factual take. I think Jason is more entertaining than Travis. And I love Travis, one of my boys. But I think Jason is more entertaining. And I also have a take that if Jason, when he retires, if he's one of those old linemen that loses like 70, 80 pounds, he'd probably be more, he'd be better looking than Travis. Travis gets a lot of love because, you know, the girls think he's one of the most good looking dudes. I have a take that I think Jason is actually probably going to be the better looking one if he loses a lot of weight.
Hey, I'm going to tell you, that beard was doing a lot of heavy lifting for Travis Kelce because he shaved that shit off.
And they turned on him immediately, didn't they?
Yeah.
All right, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about another documentary in the making and our guy Michael Orr, who has been blindsided. Welcome back to Journeyman. We got my man Juju Gotti joining me and Dragonfly Jones today on Journeyman. Juju, what's up, man?
Man, we in the streets of Miami, Florida right now. You feel me? Salute to Dragonfly Jones, bro. I'm a big fan
my
of y'all,
dog,
man.
What
hey,
up, bro,
you're funny as hell on the line. We can talk about that later.
I appreciate
now. Salute
you, bro.
To you, though, brother.
All right, look, yes, man. So much love on the Journeyman podcast. But we had you on last week, Juju, and we appreciate you. But this week is like, this is the real thing because you got a real life insight to this next topic.
Look, I see because you got them diamonds on. I know it's the real deal. I can't even see scrapes since I walked in this mother trucker. But hey, here we are.
Hey, Dragonfly, look. You want love, bro? If you want to feel like you on top of the world, you gotta get Juju around you. The most positive
energy
that you'll ever be around.
Juju, you feel
great Juju. That's where it comes from. But look, so Michael Orr is suing the Tui family, and if you don't know, the Tui family, who were the subjects of the Oscar-winning film Blindside.
You feel me? Big capital O on that Oscar.
Capital O on that Oscar, right? So it comes out. Michael Orr is suing the family because in his own words, they tricked him into signing adoption papers and they took over basically his business at that time, at a time where he's like not really knowing what's going on. They essentially usher him to the Ole Miss to go play at Ole Miss, and then they go make millions of dollars off of what a lot of people will say is one of, if not the best football sports movie, not my opinion, in The Blind Side, starring Sandra Bullock. He should sue Sandra Bullock as well. Just kidding. I love Sandra. Sandra for the people. But Juju, the reason why you're an expert here is because you were an extra in the movie Blindside.
You feel me? We've been in the streets of Atlanta, Georgia.
We got
Thomasville Projects. We was outside.
What was your role? Tell Tyler what your role was in Blindside.
I was Screet N-word number 3. You did. You feel me? Fresh on set. You did.
So when Sandra comes to the hood,
yeah,
you are front and center as, you know, one of the hood.
You're right.
They say
act like she actually walking up on you in the hood. At that time, he didn't know if it was rated R or rated PG-13.
Uh-huh.
They said, say whatever. Just act like this is coming up. He was one of them kind of white guys. Salute to my Caucasian brothers. We see y'all. You feel me? The Caucasus Mountains. But he was like, yeah, say whatever to her. So I'm giving her everything. I'm like,
Yeah, that's wild. They told you to say whatever to Sandra Bullock, and you was just like, cool.
She auntie from now on. That's actually my auntie. You feel me?
You ain't even question it. Like, I want to know where this is going to be, how it's going to come out.
The trajectory of my life at that point,
uh-huh,
it was all Coke 45 and Black and Miles. You feel me? So wherever that took me.
Oh, you was ready for the moment then.
You feel me, Dragonfly?
You just got paid to just curse out a white lady, basically.
That shit was fire.
The American dream.
Yeah, they might put you in some history books at some point.
But as you say that, though, Michael Orr was there.
Was he?
You feel me? On set. Yeah, we was in the hood. Michael Orr walked up because it was a big rumbling about, oh, damn, that's him right there. You
uh-huh.
feel me? So it's, to me, it's kind of, oh, dang, it's shocking to hear that he wasn't a fan of the movie and in part also the people
right.
involved, because if you wasn't a fan of none of that back then, what you doing walking up on set getting love in the hood for?
Yeah.
Kissing babies, shaking hands, getting high fives and shit. So, hey, if it wasn't cool then, what's going on, bitch, bro?
Let us know. I am interested because it sounds like maybe he didn't know what like the final product was gonna right. look like. You Tyler, right. what was your reaction when you saw the news?
I wasn't particularly blindsided, but
oh, there it is.
Hello,
got hit it with the dad joke one time for the one time. But I will say this: I always felt like it was a lot of cat in it because
so
it felt
cat.
Like a movie, you know, that was kind of put together by white people who really do not deal with black people in any meaningful capacity. But you know, I thought it was cap in a lot of the shit, like when homie said he never had his own bed before, or when she just found him walking down the streets on Thanksgiving and all, you know, all that type of
that was the one
Hallmark
for
movie shit. But I did not think that they were, you know, exploiting a homie, extorting him or what have you. I did not think that they was, you know, cashing out and robbing that man for millions. I did not see that part though.
You know, I knew it was fishy. Well, I never liked the movie, I'll be honest with you.
Damn,
I thought
bro.
I think your role, Juju.
Bro, I gave it all
snub.
I had type shit.
I feel like you should have won an Oscar. Absolutely. That was for two seconds
Justice
of acting.
Virginia,
I don't know if I've ever seen somebody put a performance together like that.
Thank you,
I'm being honest, I hated that movie. Mm. For the same reasons you just said, Tyler. And what's funny is my brother, who also played in the NFL for 9 years, he went to go see it with his kids, his five kids. And the part where they said, I've never had one of these before. Yeah. What, you never had a room? A bed. He stood up. And he made his kid stand up. His son actually went to go play football at Penn State.
Yeah.
But they all stood up and they walked out of the theater.
Oh.
He took his kids out of the theater and they never finished the movie.
They ain't see my dog Juju's part enough.
They
man.
Ain't, right. even, they ain't even get the Juju's part.
I ain't gonna lie to you. They hit my heart when he said, oh, what? Up, man. I said, oh, no.
Yeah, bro. So I wasn't surprised. But what raised some red flags to me when I would play against Michael Orr, and this is like around the time he was obviously with the Ravens, so after the game, I remember like we were shaking hands and I was like, yo, congrats on the movie. And I hadn't seen it at that point. And he wasn't like, yo, I appreciate it. That's what's up. It was, he didn't want to talk about it. So he was very, you could tell even then he wasn't happy around the portrayal of him, which to be honest, he's just big, dumb, poor,
right.
can't hardly speak, don't know nothing. I mean, Sandra not only got cussed out by you and Hush, she also taught him how to play left tackle, which is crazy.
Right.
So I mean, I'm not surprised by it. It is a disheartening like story because I always say there's a thin line between empowerment and exploitation. I never understand people who want to insert themselves into the spaces that other people occupy and are experts at and make themselves the center or take the credit, which happens in sports all the time. It happens with agents. It happens with coaches. Right. I had a coach in college after I made it to the league, you know, and he wasn't a great coach, wasn't a bad dude, but just not a great coach. And he told me, he said, you know, I've always tried to be a father figure to you. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I got a dad, bro. Get like, what is your obsession with trying to make yourself a part of a story that you're not in? That's what's crazy to me about the Michael Orr situation.
Yeah. I'm gonna tell you another part in that movie that was just pure USDA grade A certified cat was when he took you know the state test to become, you know, academically eligible to get a D1 scholarship or whatever, and they said, you know, he scored low on the academic part, but he scored very high with protective instincts. What the fuck type of test has protective instincts, dog? I done took all types of tests, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? I done went to college. I was an AP kid in high school. I done took all types of standardized state tests. I ain't never seen no protective index on none of the results I ever got back, dog.
The only question on that guy is, protective will you put your instinct. Arm in front of the passenger seat if everybody about to go off?
They took that man through a combine and said, oh, he can't read, but he's a great left tackle.
Right. Yeah, they did my boy Orr dirty. Like, she had to explain to him that being left tackle is like protecting his little brother. Like, bro, he knows how football works. Like, he don't need to, you know, try to go down, right? It was insulting as fuck, bro.
Like
I said, I really ain't fuck with it with the movie as a premise at first. But now that I know that they robbing my boy and lying on him, now we need justice for Big Mike, dog.
Justice for Big Mike,
I think you should do that, Dragonfly, because you are an expert in this field. I think you should break down the movie The Blind Side 30 minutes at a time. And put out episodes of what the hell is going on, actually. You feel me?
Actually.
Yeah, I might have to watch it, you know, with my cat goggles on, you know?
just a quick rewatch. That is wild. Not only the protective instincts, the other scene in there is when he's like getting interrogated by the NCAA. And if you go back and watch that scene, which has been circulating on social media, she got the whole thing right. And it's funny. Yeah, I was like, yo, you really did this movie, right, told on yourself on a slick, and tried to turn it around and make yourself the hero in it. That's some diabolical shit right there.
Right. You try to be heartwarming with your thievery. That's messed up. Bro.
That's crazy. She's in there like, it's going to set a precedent that boosters can just move in and adopt any prospect to try to get them to go to a school. And he's like, no, it's not like that. And I'm like, that, looking back, it was exactly like that.
Exactly like that.
I actually feel bad for Michael. I really and honestly and truly do, because it's messed up.
Yeah. I made my money out the Blind Side, and he did, apparently. So,
how much money you make out the Blind Side?
Hey, man, I don't know what's going on there. Salute to Dragonfly Jones. I don't know what's happening.
Juju told me in the break he going to join a class action suit with Michael Orr, because he felt like he didn't get paid any residuals either.
You feel me? We be struggling. Every Thanksgiving, I be seeing them. You feel me? I was telling them, damn, the Blind Side, damn.
You ain't getting nothing.
Who getting that money? Salute to SAG after. You feel me? We outside.
That Black and Mild that was in your ear in the scene, was that yours, or they gave that to you?
Look, they gave me that cherry guy. It was a cherry Black and Mild. At that time in my life, the reggae, regular, was the preference. You feel me? I prefer the reggae Black and Mild and the Coke 45. But at the same time, they had High Life and they had O'Doul's. They put some non-alcoholic O'Doul's for me out of the drink. You feel me? And the cherry Black and Mild.
O'Doul's in the O'Doul's, hood? What hood was this?
That's what I'm saying. It was Thomaville Projects. It was the hood, the Young L.A. Salute it back in the day, young. It might be before your time. But Young L.A., that was his projects, and it was all out there. It was a big deal. Salute to Auntie Sandy, man. I got your back forever, sis.
Oh my gosh. Tyler, when you're seeing this news, now obviously we all knew, I don't want to say we all knew, but I think it does undo, like, on this show, and especially Juju has obviously an affinity for Blind Side. I mean, that's natural. You're in the movie. I get it, Juju. But I feel like most people regard this, I'm not even kidding, as one of the best sports movies. I roll my eyes every time, and I don't know if anybody else is like that, and yet hindsight is 20/20. But like when you think about Blind Side prior to this news coming out, did you look at it favorably? Like,
I knew it was bullshit, but I knew the masses loved it. You know what I'm saying? Like my mama, for instance, she loved it. Like my mama does never watch football. And I remember when the Ravens won the Super Bowl, she texted me the next day, yay, Blind Side. She ain't even called that dude by his name.
Nah, my dude.
She called bro Blind Side. You feel me? So yeah, it's for sure, you know, one of those feel good movies that don't feel good anymore to the people who it might've felt good to.
Oh man, we should already be making this doc, man. I hope this spawns like Bishop Sycamore, like three versions of a scam doc. You know what I'm saying? Because it absolutely deserves it. I comp the Blind Side as like the Macklemore of sports movies. You know what I'm saying? Macklemore's album prevented Kendrick Lamar from winning best hip hop album.
Right. And how do you feel about that, the Academy? Like looking back on that. Listen to the damn Pawn Shop one time right now. And listen to
Thrift
the word
Thrift Shop.
Whatever the hell he was talking about. Listen to that right now today, Academy. Come on, get over yourselves.
And shit was garbage back then, and it's super garbage now. It's warm, heated over garbage.
Come on, man. Aging, fur coat.
Aging like milk. Like milk. All right, let's take a break. Let's talk a little football and basketball news when we get back. All right, let's talk a little NFL news. There was a story that came out this week about Kyle Shanahan talking about the end of last season when all his quarterbacks went down. Jimmy G went down, Brock Purdy went down, Trey Lance. And he was like, if they had made it through that last game against the Philadelphia Eagles, he had lined up Phillip Rivers to come back and start in the Super Bowl for the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm looking at the rundown, and Jeff has asked, like, do you think this is something he would have really done? And would it have been the craziest sports story of all time? Drew, I'm going to start with you. What you think?
Bro, it's the capest of all caps.
It's cap? Nah, it ain't cap, dude.
Like, somebody go to his phone. Do you have Phillip Rivers' number in your phone? Bro, yeah, this is the capest sentence ever, bro. Nah, that wasn't lined up. You had your heart set on Brock Purdy. Then it tragically threw the arm out or whatever happened. You did not know Phillip Rivers. He don't know you. So it's capped out. Salute to you, but you capped out, big bro.
Juju said he capped out. Tyler, what you think, man?
I wouldn't doubt it. Like, you know, like we discussed, you know, earlier, Hulk, about how Kyle Shanahan's a quarterback whisperer. Like, this would have been the the ultimate heat check for him. I think that he probably believes wholeheartedly he could have won with, you know, 53-year-old Phillip Rivers, who hasn't played in 20 years, hopping out there and going under center.
I'm with you. I'm with Tyler Jew. You wrong on this one. It's not Cap, bro. This is the kind of stuff that Kyle Shanahan, like, thrives on, yo. He wants to put himself in situations where, and it's, he's a competitor, and he likes to, like, he put the pressure on himself for everybody to look and be like, damn, I can't believe that you went out there and won under those circumstances.
Bruh, y'all the experts, so if y'all telling me that, I gotta believe it. But I just, when I heard it, I was like, boy, he the most capped out person on that side of the Mississippi River.
I don't think he capped out. I think he's just a wild boy. I think he just wholeheartedly believes he could have won the Super Bowl with that man.
And he is wrong, and I am Kyle Shanahan's, I'm a believer. I played for him. He is my best coach that I've ever had, best offensive coordinator, hands down, not even close.
Yeah.
But there is no way in hell they were going to win that Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. Not because Phillip Rivers doesn't have the ability or because it's anything in his coaching. Phillip Rivers has 10 kids, bro. There is no,
talk about it.
You can't be a good father to 10 kids and be great at anything else.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, as men, it is my, when I see people who are in super good shape and are at the top of their craft in their job, I'm like, you're like a halfway good dad. Because there's not enough time to be, there's not enough time to be great at all three things. Something has to suffer. And he got 10 of them.
He got 10 of them. Bro, I know if you got like 10 kids, there got to be some who you just really
don't like.
Like, right? You really don't like, don't care about.
Don't,
I know you
got
to have your favorites, bro, if you got 10 of them, bro. Like,
think about that, bro.
You right, because you can't budget out your parenting equally to 10. Like, some going to have to stick out. Some going to have to knock themselves out of contention. You know what I'm saying?
Some of them,
like, some going to have to show some personality or something.
Some of them are raising themselves.
There's
a couple of his kids. If you have 10 children, a couple of your kids are raising yourself. So, Phillip Rivers, they always debate whether he's a Hall of Fame quarterback or not because he doesn't have a Super Bowl. There is no way in hell he could have won a Super Bowl. You have too many kids to win a Super Bowl. There is no way.
Bro, imagine how many times he watched Moana or some shit.
Bro.
He done seen that bit through and back.
There is no way. And I think he's a good dad. That's why he keeps having kids. And like I said, there is no way you could be a good father to 10 people. Think about having 10 friends that you got to talk to every day.
Right.
Ain't no way.
Impossible. If you had 10 friends, no kids, and that's all you had to do was talk to 10 friends every day, just talk to them, how would you find a time, let alone having to raise them,
right,
teach them like how to ride bikes,
right,
teach them how to drive, teach them, you know, like, there's just too much, bro. It's impossible. I don't understand that
about how guys talk to like 4 or 5 women at a time.
How, bro?
How are you listening to how a day was 4 times? Like, bro, like, come on. Like,
there's no way.
Morning text and shit.
Bro, I got one redeem for me. You feel me? How was your day? And bam, it's over.
If you in super shape and you got 5 women, you are shitty at whatever job you do for a living. And that is just, there's no way, because there's too many, there's not enough hours in the day.
Right.
Speaking about being shitty at your job, Saints kicker, and that's a bad segue because he wasn't shitty, but the shitty part is that he kicked the game-winning field goal, and he kept being mistaken as a fan because he looks like he's 12. And so he was stopped coming into the stadium and asked for his credential. And even afterwards, he was going out of the player's exit, and he was still stopped and almost kicked out, which I identify with, man, because I'm 5'7". And I can't tell you how many conversations that I had to have in my NFL playing career to prove that I was actually on the team.
Yeah.
And so I feel for him, but is that not the most relatable thing that you could ever hear about an NFL football player?
Bro, that's messed up, bro. If I was him, I would have got tough about 4 or 5 security guards. Like, I'd be like, hey, bro, remember me. Remember this face. This is that face you're going to see. You fired tomorrow. Watch. I'm not going to be winning football games for the Kansas City Chiefs organization and not being allowed to go places in here. I'm so sorry, whoever owned this book, what's his name? Mr. Hunt, whoever. I'm going to need you to I'm going to clean this up here, bro, before I do it. Because I know
before how. I clean it up.
Clean them up.
I think kicker is like it's a bad position to play. If you want to start.
No respect, dog.
No respect. No respect. It's like
I remember when the Urban Meyer bombshell dropped with how shitty he was at Jacksonville, and they were talking about how he would just run up on the kicker and just kick the shit out of him. Like, the kicker's the one dude on the whole football team, that whole 53-man roster that Urban Meyer put hands and feet on, dog.
He's like, I'm gonna just go kick you for no other reason except for the fact that you're a kicker. Kickers get no respect, so much so that Justin Tucker is as good at his job as Patrick Mahomes is at his. Like, as generational talent. And there was video of him hitting like an 80-yard field goal in pregame. He goes in the game, preseason game, hits a 60-yarder. And nobody cares. Generational talent that nobody gives a damn about.
Right. Like pitchers.
Like, you know, I'm with you because, you know, like, there's really no consensus on like the NFL GOAT, right? Because people say Brady, Rice, Jim Brown, Barry Sanders. Some even say Lawrence Taylor because, you know, it's so many moving parts in football. So it's like an inexact science to compare players across positions. But I've always been with you on my stance that, you know, Justin Tucker is better at his job than any other NFL player is better at their job.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the gap between Justin Tucker and whoever you have at number two is bigger than whatever gap you put up, you know, a top guy in the NFL and their runner up. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
He's a GOAT. He's literally like the most talented, and the stats back it up. His performance backs it up.
And he's saying opera. You feel me? But, so,
he's multi-talented. You feel me? But being the best kicker is, you know, like me, I'm the best 5'7" NFL football player ever. Receiver. I can't even say that because Maurice Jones-Drew is way better than me. So I got to say the best 5'7" receiver in NFL history, nobody cares.
I care.
You care, Drew, but you're the only person.
Yeah.
Because Justin Tucker is the same way. He's the best kicker, and ultimately, no one will care. He'll be a Hall of Famer, but he doesn't get nearly the fanfare that he should.
Right.
Speaking of not getting fanfare, or actually getting too much fanfare, this is going to be a bad take because it's going to sound like a hypocritical take. Are you guys familiar with Deuce Vaughn?
For sure.
Yes.
Deuce Vaughn is a 5'5 running back who was drafted by the Cowboys. His father actually worked for the organization, so it was a very feel-good moment. So Deuce Vaughn, he's like that. He's hitting the spins. He does look like a baby out there playing in the NFL. And again, I can identify with that. But I'm even taller than Deuce Vaughn. But Deuce is a running back, which makes it look even crazier because every highlight, he's right next to offensive linemen, which makes him look even smaller. But his clips keep going viral. Him like spin moving, making people miss, hitting people with the shakes. And I'm curious if like Deuce Vaughn is really like that. He's a good solid player, and I think he actually will make the team and be great. But I don't know if like people are acting like he is the first of his kind. And I'm not referencing myself by any stretch because I would never put myself in that because it would be disrespectful to people like Darren Sproles for me, who was like. Darren Sproles is like one of the best all-around football players ever. He was 5'6". So I'm just curious if you guys are like, yo, we really feel like Deuce Vaughn is going to be like that. Or do you think the hype train is just there because he plays for the Dallas Cowboys?
I think he's going to be like that. Like, no offense, all the shorter brothers I know, they could play basketball, they could play football, they can run track, they'll beat your ass. Like, it's nothing about Deuce that don't say that he's not going to actually do it. And that's what's wrong with the running back's argument right now as far as getting paid. Every year you think you the man, like Tony Pollard. Like, you can't tell me that you not going to be the man next year when Zeke gone. But now here we are, and it's already people who are catching the public's eye, you feel me? So, and you got that injury. I think he going to do it.
You going to do it?
I think he going to go all the way. I think he going to win the Super Bowl before he done. I think he going to go down as a Hall of Fame player. You hear it here first.
Hall of Fame. Oh, that's a wild take. That's a wild take, Jude. What you got, Tyler?
I think he's going to be good, too. Of course, you know, he's not durable enough to be an every down back. But, you know, I think that, you know, you can put him in some situations where he'll thrive. Like Darren Sproles has been the closest comparison to him. You know, both about the same size, both went to Kansas State. I will say that something that gives me reason to believe that he's going to be okay is he's really good at taking contact, right? Like, that's what hopped out to me. He doesn't look like he's getting murdered when he gets tackled, you know what I'm saying?
Bro.
And that's a very important skill to kind of know how to take contact for a guy that size.
Nah, man, I don't think he'll be a Hall of Fame player. It's not me hating. This is the expertise.
I don't know.
Here.
It sounds like
I've been
little,
out there. I've taken
like
those hits.
Quack like a duck.
What I'm saying is, I think you made a good point, Tyler. The way he falls, the way he gets hit,
because
he gets hit too much. Like, I could prevent being hit because I played a slot.
Yeah.
And Darren Sproles, he actually was really good at that. And I would say I would encourage you to go watch the way Darren Sproles would take hits versus Deuce. And Deuce is still learning, so we'll give him a chance to do that. But I don't know. I just feel like it's disrespectful to the Maurice Jones-Drews of the world and the Darren Sproles, who have honestly, I mean, these are guys that have 10, 15,000 yards in their career, and we're acting like we've never seen this before when we have.
Right,
That's all I'm saying, Jim.
And I take my protocols from you, and I respect you. So, hey, Big Bro told me it's a different way. I got to believe it.
I feel like it's a hype train. You feel like Dak Prescott is a hype? Why are you talking about the Cowboys? I feel like people are harder on Dak because he plays for the Cowboys.
Yeah, you're right. He's America's quarterback. Hey, you America's quarterback. Go USA, goddamn. Like, let's do it. Let's see it. So we can't be too hard on him. Like, hey, y'all, and them boys don't win nothing. Like, so salute to Dakota.
What is your take on A-Rod, Tyler?
You know, I think he doesn't get the criticism that Dak does, but I think that, you know, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, I think that's perhaps the single most scrutinized position in all of American sports, right? Like, you know, people give the Cowboys fans for, you know, shit for saying that they're America's team, but for one, they do have the biggest following of any NFL team. And, you know, they're a washed up franchise who's like, you know, sadly, empathetically clinging to the glory days of the past and hoping one day they pull it all together. That's American as hell, bro. Like, y'all are America's team, right? Right? Y'all a bunch of losers, but then played a sense of self-worth, bro. Ain't nothing more American than that.
Dang, man, you just completely described my pulled hamstring situation that we talked about to open the show perfectly to end this thing. Just real quick, Drew, I went out there and run some routes with my son. I ran one route. He told me my brakes look a little slow, so I tried to really turn it up on him. And I pulled my damn hamstring, and I've been limping around ever since.
Oh, my God. No, that's terrible. I'm so sorry for that, brother. Like, it's a pain that I feel for you.
So much.
You got to know when to let you have it, though, bro. You got to know when to concede.
That was my time. You know what? I know it's my time. And not only with my career and my athleticism, it's also my time with this episode of Journeyman.
But also, before you leave this episode of Journeyman, your hairline has never faltered. So that's
man.
What I'm saying. Your beard on point, everything on... But the hamstring, hey, bro, I see you. You feel me?
You know what?
But that hairline more important than that hamstring at this age.
There is more work put into my hairline and beard than Eric Burkhart put into coercing America to think Johnny Manziel was going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. So we'll leave it at that. That does it for this episode of Journeyman. Shout out to the people at the DraftKings Network and Metalark Media. Shout out to my guy, Tyler Perrier, a.k.a. Dragonfly Jones, and Juju Gotti, the shoddy from Atlanta and star of Blindside. That's it for this week's Journeyman. Make sure you journey back next week, same time, same place. And until then, money trees is the perfect place for shade. That's just how I feel.